Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, broadcasting this week from the subhead department here at Car Talk Plaza. We're talking about subheadlines, right?
Yeah.
The second smaller headline that's underneath the main headline in a newspaper.
Exactly. You got it.
For those kids who still know what a newspaper is.
Right. Well, on the website FARC.com, people submit secondary headlines for current stories. I'll give you an example.
Go ahead, I dare you.
The headline is, one killed, six injured in pie factory explosion.
Okay, and the subhead is?
Blast heard up to 3.14159 miles away.
Oh, that's bad. Just tell me, do they get better or worse from now on?
They get better.
Oh, thanks.
Here's another one. The headline is, India loses contact with unmanned spacecraft, and the subhead, support technicians confirm that spacecraft is plugged in and turned on. All right, here's another one. Peephole in door of girl's dorm room reversed. The subhead, police are looking into it.
I bet they are.
One more. Baghdad's National Museum reopens 6 years after looting. Subhead, now on display, all the really heavy stuff.
Well, look, if you've got a headline for us about your car, give us a call. We're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name is Karen, and I'm calling from Rutland, Massachusetts.
Where is Rutland?
Rutland is right smack in the center of Massachusetts.
Really?
Yep, so it's a little bit northwest of Worcester.
Ah, okay. Now I got it.
And a lot of wagons must have gone through there.
Probably.
Going east to west and north to south. I mean, after all, it is the middle of the state. And they probably wore a rut in the road. And
that's right.
Hence the name Rutland.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. That's it.
Okay.
Well, thanks for calling.
So what's up, Karen?
Well, I have a 2004 Jeep Liberty Sport. And it's got about 105,000 miles on it.
Oh.
And at random, my car makes a sound that sounds remarkably like flatulence.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Who's driving with you? Your husband?
No. He tries to pass himself off now as the car. But, yeah, it happens when I'm the only one in the car.
Oh.
The first time it happened, it actually scared me because I knew I thought I was the only one in the car, and I knew I didn't do it.
That's good.
Now, there are various kinds of flatulence, as I'm sure you're well aware. There's the kind that's produced by...
And my brother
and well versed in all of them.
Expert in all of them.
Well, we were discussing, in fact, just before we started the show today, that there's been some concern in the scientific community that cow flatulence, which is mostly methane, you're probably aware of this, may be more responsible for global warming than CO2.
Right. I've heard.
You know, and if your car is emitting some kind of flatulence, well, you could just put it right over the top.
Wow.
I could.
You know, so does it sound, is it a dry flatulence sound, or is it, you know, never mind, we don't want to go into this, do we?
I don't want to hear it. I just don't want to hear it.
But it's loud enough.
Make the sound.
Well, I was afraid you would ask me to do that.
Don't forget, you called us.
It always starts with a puh kind of sound, so it kind of just goes puh. Yeah, kind of.
Like that?
Sort of, but louder.
Really?
Yeah, and it seems to be coming from the front end of the car.
And it only happens once?
It happens randomly. I put on about 60 miles a day to and from work.
Yeah.
And it'll probably kind of let loose at least once during the day while I'm driving.
Oh, really?
So it's frequently just a one-time thing.
Kind of, like once on the way in maybe and once on the way out.
Does it seem to run better after this?
I haven't noticed that.
No.
And it hasn't affected in any way the way it does run.
No.
And you think it's coming from under the hood, though?
Well, not so much under the hood, kind of under my feet.
And what's the duration of this flatulence? I mean,
just
3 seconds, 4 seconds, if you have to rate it on maybe
three.
3 seconds.
Yep. Just a quick little burst.
So it happens, and then it's over for the day.
You know what? There are a lot of things it could be, I suppose. My first inclination is that it's coming from the the evaporative emission system. It's blowing off extra pressure.
But wouldn't that happen in the back of the car?
Well, I don't know where the canister is here, and it could be that you know, so it could be further forward. But I'm inclined to say it isn't that. If it's been going on for a long time, it probably would have turned on the check engine light.
Oh, no, that hasn't happened.
And I'm thinking it might be your ABS pump coming on.
Uh-huh.
Because
okay.
That sounds like a bunch of little farts. Like, here's what it would sound like for most cars. and it really runs for a few seconds because the ABS pump is designed to maintain proper pressure in something called the accumulator, so that if you do have to step on your brake under adverse conditions and deploy the ABS, there's enough reserve pressure so that you don't have to pump the brake. The pressure in this accumulator pushes the fluid to the various wheels as it needs it.
Okay.
And I think that's what you're hearing.
Okay.
Now, maybe it's on the way out. You can take it to your shop, and they can hook up the scan tool, and they can cycle on the ABS pump.
Okay.
Okay, and when they do that, you can say, ha-ha!
That's the noise!
That's the noise.
That's the noise.
I think that's what it might be.
All righty.
But with 105,000 miles on it, I don't think I'd be too worried. It may go on like this for a very long time.
Okay, so it's not something I need to go fix.
No, but if the ABS light comes on, you need to fix it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All righty.
See you, Karen.
See you later. Thanks.
Good luck.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, boy. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey. My name's Larry. I'm from Huntsville, Alabama.
Hey, Larry.
How you doing?
We're doing great.
You're doing great. Good.
Well, so far.
Yeah, well, I got a problem here. I got a 2006 Impala, and it's my wife's car, so I need to get this fixed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we have one of those remote starts that you start from inside the house.
Yeah.
The car warms up. Okay, well, while the car's running, the heater does not blow any hot air. That never gets hot. Okay, when she starts driving down the road, it works. And then when she comes to a stop or, you know, a light or something, it stops again. And then it doesn't start again until you start driving.
Oh, let me get this right. It blows, but it blows cold air.
Yeah.
And when you're moving with it, you're getting adequate heat?
Yes, it works fine. But you got to be moving. So I told her either keep moving or run red lights.
That's good advice.
She didn't like that.
No.
I mean, does it really? You've driven the car, obviously.
I have.
You stop at a light, and how long after you stop does the heat just stop coming out? Is it seconds?
Almost immediately. It just dies down, like, and it starts blowing cold air.
Did you did you by any chance have the cooling system flushed this past winter or before the winter?
No, we haven't.
You haven't? You should have.
Great.
Well, one of the things that can cause this to happen is insufficient coolant in the system. So that when the thing is at idle, it's not getting pushed fast enough or hard enough by the water pump, which is only running at idle speed. It's running as fast as the engine is running.
Okay.
So that if there isn't sufficient...
I'm voting for that.
If there isn't sufficient coolant and there's air trapped in the heater, you'll have the coolant circulating around through the engine, but not enough to get it into the heater because there's a bunch of air mixed in with it.
Okay.
So that's one possibility. And the easiest way to do that is to find this out, is to, when the engine is cold, open the hood and take off the cap for the radiator and make sure there's plenty of coolant in it.
Okay.
And if there isn't, top it up. It probably takes a special stuff, which you'll have to get from your Chevrolet dealer.
Yeah.
Okay, and if that fixes it, eureka. If that doesn't fix it, I think the other possibility maybe is that you have a loose impeller or something on the water pump. You know, so you wouldn't want to.
No, he's not going to do that.
you
don't want that.
You don't want that. Forget
option. That's bad.
That's bad. Yeah, forget all about that. In fact, strike that, Your Honor. I withdraw the question.
Yeah.
Or the statement, for that matter.
In fact, if you look in and there's not enough coolant in there,
okay,
fill it up.
Just fill it up and that's it.
And drive away.
Yeah. And that might do it.
Then it'll look like I know what I'm doing.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, no, we're on your side here, Larry. We're hoping that that does the trick for you. But if it isn't that, it's going to be something a lot worse. But you might want to call the dealership if, in fact, there is enough coolant in there. Call them up and see if they've had this problem with other Impalas.
Okay.
I haven't seen it particularly. Usually when it's this problem, it's something like as simple as low coolant.
Okay, I hope that's it.
No, we do, too.
We do, too, yeah.
Yes, we don't have any other answer. See you later, man.
Okay, appreciate it. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, do you know what time it is?
Time to chip the ice off the patio furniture?
No, not yet. It's time to play Stump the Chumps. This is the part of the show where we dig up a caller from a previous show to see how they did with our advice.
And if they received our get well cards and the flowers and all that stuff. So who's our lucky player this week?
It's Katie from Boulder, Colorado. Remember Katie?
No, I don't really remember Katie. How am I supposed to remember every Tom, Dick, and Katie that calls us over the years?
She just called us a couple of weeks ago.
Oh.
Her husband had gotten himself into a little situation.
My husband owns a 2006 Mini Cooper S. And he occasionally likes to park on the street.
Uh-huh.
And our street is a little bit on the sketchy side in terms of the paving. And so he managed to park his car in what was, at the time, a giant slush puddle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we went away to vacation for, you know, over the holidays, and we came back. And my husband's Mini Cooper S was frozen up to its rims to the street.
All four rims?
Two of them.
Two on one side?
Two on one side, on the passenger side, yeah. So we're currently in possession of a $30,000 Royal Blue paperweight.
Okay.
And we really need some help. My husband has tried pretty much everything. He's tried a pickaxe. He's tried a hairdryer.
Hairdryer.
Yeah, he had some friends in the physics department that want to bring their heat gun, which gets up to 600 degrees Fahrenheit, but we're afraid we might melt the street.
Not to mention setting the car on fire. That's going to be exciting.
Well, I don't remember. What advice did we finally give Katie?
We told her husband to drill holes in the ice with an electric drill and then pour boiling water into the holes.
And is he in the burn ward now?
I don't know.
Well, let's find out. Katie, are you there?
I am here, guys.
All right, look, before you fill us in, we have not spoken since your last appearance on Car Talk, have we?
No.
And the answer you're about to give has not been influenced by our staff, the staff of NPR, or by the set of electrically heated tires that we sent you.
Nope. Thank you, though.
So, Katie, tell us, did the guys try our drill and boil method?
He sure did. He was so excited, and he did it.
And?
I
don't like that
failure.
I'm concerned about the He did it, and?
It was an epic failure.
It was an epic failure. Not just it didn't work, it was an epic.
Epic failure.
It was epic. Yeah, he tried it, and he drilled all these holes, and he boiled about 10 gallons of water, and he poured it in, and it kind of turned about 2 inches worth of the foot of ice into slush.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
Then we kind of stared pathetically at it for a couple of minutes.
Oh, yeah, I got no time for staring. You drive right out.
And then a guy that we had never talked to from across the street, one of these biker dudes, Dave the biker dude, came over with a 40-pound iron spike in a heavy-duty shovel.
Oh.
And he and my husband liberated the car from the ice literally just by beating it into submission. Now, the problem here is that the ice was so deep and so entrenched that it actually had, without us realizing it, caught onto the mud flap as well.
Oh.
And so when my husband drove the car out of the ice,
the mud flap stayed behind.
The mud flap is still sticking out of the ice, guys.
Well, at least you have your parking spot reserved.
And so, you know, I wanted to ask you guys, as long as I have you, you know, what should we be doing about this mud flap? I mean,
well, let's go back to the epic failure thing, because I'm afraid that I wasn't specific enough, and I thought a guy with a scientific background like your husband with connections in the physics department wouldn't use a little 1/8-inch drill bit. You need to get in there with a big honking half-inch drill bit.
Yeah, he did. We have one of those, like, crazy mason bits, you know, that's, like, good 6 inches long. And, you know, I mean, it just wasn't enough. And, you know, in hindsight, probably we would have needed, like, a vat of boiling oil, you know, like you use, like, on a castle rampart.
Yeah.
I did think afterwards that salt might have done it, you know, a 5-pound bag of salt.
Yeah.
And so your mud flap is still there.
It's still there.
You'll dig that out about April 15th. That'll remind you to send in your income tax return.
Exactly.
Boy,
exactly.
Epic failure. Not just, well, it didn't work. Epic.
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 Well, thanks for playing Stump the Chumps, Katie.
All right. Oh, but you know what? Just, and I'll mention as well, he wasn't even sad about it because later that day, he found $20.
Oh, man.
Life gives you lemons, but sometimes you find $20.
That's anyway. Pretty good. Thanks, thanks, Katie. See ya.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye, guys.
Look, if you hear someone you'd like us to bring back for Stump the Chumps, email us your suggestion from cartalk.com.
All right, look, it's time for a short break. And when we come back, we'll have the answer to last week's puzzler. Do you remember the puzzler?
Let's see. I'm seeing numbers.
Numbers! Numbers! Very good. There were numbers in the puzzler.
And I'm seeing also letters.
Duh!
All right, I don't remember it. Remind me.
Well, it was about a house painter who was trying very hard to remember a phone number.
Oh, the kids' ages and the boat painting.
Exactly, and I'll have the whole story, and we'll take more of your questions, too, in just a minute.
So please stay tuned.
Is that you? Oh, that's not you. No, yours is a lighter shade. Every time I pass one by, I check out the license plate. I'm looking for a dark-haired angel with a dent.
And even though Nigerian email scammers nod in admiration whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.
Hey, if you'd like to hear more Car Talk.
Yeah, like you're a parent and need a scared straight punishment for your kids.
You can download hundreds of classic Car Talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. We're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler. And this was from my Paint by Numbers series and was sent in by someone named John Calhoun.
Not the former senator and vice president.
No, no, he died in like 1850.
Oh.
Didn't you go to high school with him?
Yeah, I did.
No, no, different John Calhoun. Anyway, he says, I have a friend who's a mostly out-of-work house painter. One day he stopped at a red light with his truck, you know, with the ladders on top and the paint dripping off the bumper, and the guy stopped next to him, blows his horn, and motions for him to roll down the window. The painter rolls down his window, and the fellow asks if he's looking for work. You bet I am. Mm. Do you have a business card? Asks the prospective customer. He fumbles around for one like everyone does when they don't have a business card, right?
Yeah. He pats his shirt pocket, looks around next to him, like maybe he dropped it, you know.
Yeah, then he finally admits, no, I really don't have one. But I'll tell you what, the painter says, give me your number, I'll remember it, and I'll give you a call tomorrow. The fellow in the other vehicle starts to rattle off the number. Same area code as me, the painter thinks. I won't have any trouble remembering that. Next comes the three-digit exchange. Huh, same as mine. So all I have to remember is the last four digits. Piece of cake.
Sure, piece of cake.
Well, the light turns green, and as they pull away, the customer yells out the last four digits. The painter, upon hearing them, thinks, boy, this is my lucky day. Turns out one of those four digits is his son's age. The next one is his daughter's age. A third one is the number of months he's behind on his boat payments. And the fourth one is the number of nights his wife has made him sleep on the sofa. He's a snorer, I guess. In thinking about the four-digit number, he also realizes that it happens to be divisible by three.
Mm.
He says, great, I've got it. I'll call this guy first thing in the morning. Whoopee!
Yeah.
Well, 3 days later, he realizes that he forgot to make the phone call, so he sits down to retrieve the number from his memory and write it down. Now, he knows the area code. It's the same as his, right?
Yeah. So is the three-digit exchange.
Right, so he just needs to remember those last four digits. He says, let me see. One of them is the number of nights I spent on the sofa this month. That's easy. Oh, yeah, then there's my boat payment default status. I got that. My daughter's age and my son's age. And then he remembers that the four-digit number is also divisible by three. He takes that number, divides it by three, and it works. He says, Eureka! I remembered it.
Huh.
He makes the call. It's the wrong number. It's a retired proctologist who told him what to do with his paintbrush. Anyway, something went terribly wrong. The question is, what was it and why?
Yeah.
Well, if you paid attention, he obviously got the order wrong.
Oh.
He did have a four-digit number that was divisible by three, but it turns out that if you have a four-digit number or a five-digit number, any digit number, if it's divisible by three, no matter how you rearrange the digits, that other number is also divisible by three. And it turns out with a four-digit number, there are 24 ways to arrange those digits.
Oh.
So he dialed one number, there are 23 others. So he might dial 22 more before
he'd
still
be wrong.
It'd still be wrong until he finally gets the correct number.
Oh.
Pretty cute, eh? So who's our winner?
Our winner this week is Larry Klein from Phoenix, Arizona. And for having his answer selected at random from among all the correct answers that we got, Larry's going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at CarTalk.com, with which Larry can pick up a four-pack of CarTalk reusable shopping bags.
Yeah, these are the bags that you always forget and leave in the car. But if you did remember them, you could do your food shopping with them and not have to waste a bunch of paper or even worse, plastic bags every time you went to shop, you know?
This bag happens to say CarTalk on it and has several messages from us, including instructions on how to use the bag.
Yeah, it says, like, step one, remember bag. Step two, use the bag.
Use the bag. Right. And on the other side, it says, my other reusable bag is from a good NPR show.
Well, I would hope so. Anyway, we'll have a new puzzler coming up, so don't change the cat box just yet. In the meantime, we'll take your car questions at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Nate calling from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Hey, Nate. Hey. What's up, man?
Well, I've got a 2001 Subaru Outback, and it's been developing this sort of weird engine noise. It seems like the engine is running rougher lately, and it's been like a subtle shift, but gradually, like when I accelerate, it sounds kind of like a sewing machine, is how I sort of describe it.
Make the noise for us, if you can.
So, usually, it seems to go away if I coast or I'm just sort of cruising at a steady speed, but if I accelerate, it kind of, like it's, you know, and it used to be very quiet. And here's the other thing that's happening, and it's getting worse, it seems, lately. Sometimes when I stop at a light, there's a sort of a hot smell, and now, almost every time I get out of the car, like when I get home, I can smell a hot smell, like, outside the car.
Mm. Well,
smells like something burning?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the smell of your savings account being burned up.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I talked to my mechanic on the phone. He didn't actually look at it, but he said, basically, time for a new car. He didn't even want to look at it.
How many miles are on this thing?
150,000, a little over.
150. Well, does it seem to run smoothly at idle?
Yeah, I mean, at idle, it doesn't seem too bad. It seems to be most noticeable when I'm accelerating.
Mm. Is the check engine light on?
Oh, it's been on for, ages.
We have a national problem here.
The light comes on, and no one pays any attention to it.
This is an epidemic.
Well, last time I got it inspected, which was in June, my mechanic said that the check engine light was to do with the catalytic converter, and he managed to sneak it through.
How's this guy going to make his boat payments? What kind of a moron is he?
That's my concern. I feel like he's not motivated enough to fix my car and take my money. He didn't even want to see it.
Yeah, and he told you he must have a wife that has a really good job. He doesn't want to exert himself. Oh,
yeah, his only suggestion was to put a little fuel system cleaner, and that didn't seem to do anything.
Well, it certainly could be something as simple as pinging. And the reason I asked if the check engine light was on is this thing has a knock sensor. And
right.
Subarus are kind of famous for having the knock sensors go out.
I think that actually happened a while ago.
Oh, yeah. No, it might have happened again.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff goes by the boards at 150,000 miles. So if the knock sensor's bad and the computer can't adjust the engine's timing, then it could be knocking. But is the noise there if you rev up the engine without moving the vehicle, just rev it up sitting still? You get that grrr kind of noise?
I want to say yes, but I'm not positive. I have it right outside.
Go ahead, do it. You're on your cell phone. Let's start this baby up.
No, actually, I'm on a landline. I'm afraid.
Okay, we'll put you on hold. We'll take another six or seven calls,
and but we'll come back.
We'll come back. When you come back, we'll be back.
Are you sure?
We have nothing else to do, Nate.
Well, it's so kind of you to work your schedule around mine.
Oh, yes.
Sure, we will.
Well, hurry up. I mean, don't go for lunch or anything. I mean, just go start the thing up. Let it warm up for a minute or so, and then let us know if that noise is there when you rev it up without moving the vehicle.
Okay, you got it. I'll be right back.
We'll be right back, as they say.
Okay.
All right. Bye.
Thanks.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, how are you?
Hi.
Good. Who's this?
It's Rebecca from Toronto.
Hi, Rebecca from Toronto.
Hi.
What's going on?
My dad took my very beautiful 2006 GLI 2.0 Turbo. It's a Volkswagen, and he smashed it really good last winter. And ever since then, it's been making this terrible knocking noise in the right side.
And when does it make the noise?
The noise is the worst when it's in neutral. So when it's in neutral, it makes like a tick, 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 and it's totally on the right side of the car.
Uh-huh.
It's a tick, tick. Where was the accident? And you said he smashed it all up. What were the conditions that occurred here? How was it smashed up, and where did it get hit?
So he was at a four-way stop, and it's sort of vague in that we don't... He still, I don't think, has told me the whole story, but...
Of course not. Why would he?
So he was turning left at the four-way stop, and then this lady was coming through... It sounds like she didn't really stop, and so she was coming through her stop sign as he was turning left, and she totally mashed the entire right side of the car, like... It was a gong show. Like, the whole bumper, the front wing needed replaces. And it's just never been right since. And I took it to Volkswagen, and they told me I'm crazy.
Rebecca, are you the only one who hears this noise?
Does anybody else?
I swear. Uh-huh. I just drove from Alabama all the way back up to Toronto, and it was ticking. And my mom was in the car, and she said, absolutely, it's ticking. Like, it's driving me so crazy.
So and the ticking occurs anytime the engine is running?
Yeah.
Is it less pronounced when you're underway, when you're doing 40 or 50 miles an hour?
Yeah, it's less pronounced.
Make the sound for us.
Give us the speed at which it occurs when you're sitting there idling, when the engine is idling at a stoplight.
Oh, if it's in neutral, it's like tick, 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 tick.
So when you're doing 20 miles an hour, it's tick, 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 and it's 60 miles an hour, it's...
You know, it's not as noticeable. Like, if I'm in sixth gear, I don't even hear it.
Right. Well, that's what I was trying to ascertain, if all the other noises that the engine makes are drowning it out, or if the ticks are so close together that they're indiscernible.
Oh, I'm going to go with B then.
Yeah.
B what? What was? I didn't know. I realized that. Give me an A, B, or C.
Yeah.
Indiscernible?
B is it's
indiscernible.
It's so fast.
It's so fast, they're indiscernible.
You can't
but they're
hear.
But they're still
I
there.
I can hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you've taken it to some other places, some repair shops, and they have claimed that they couldn't hear the noise.
Yeah, and the crazy thing was, like, it was just about out of warranty.
But when they claimed they couldn't hear it, could you still hear it?
Yeah, uh-huh, yeah.
And you were you able then to say, that noise there, that tick, 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 and they said, what noise?
No, because I wasn't there at the time. My dad was.
And dad is one of the doubters, too, right?
Yeah, here's the crazy thing, guys. He's a mechanic.
I doubt that Dad even took the car in. I think Dad went to the movies.
Yeah, impossible.
Well, you know what? It certainly could be a sticky valve or a bad valve lifter that's causing the noise, and it would cause that tick 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 kind of noise. And the only reason I say this is we had a Volkswagen in the shop about 2 weeks ago that had a similar noise, and what it turned out to be, and it sounds exactly like a noisy valve, it was a loose spark plug.
Oh,
and this loose spark plug was allowing some of the combustion gases to escape at such a high speed through that loose threads, through those loose threads, it was making a kind of sound. It sounded exactly like a weak valve that was either out of adjustment or with a weak valve lifter or a stuck valve.
Okay.
I was going to say that this is going to be relatively easy to find, except someone's got to hear it first.
Right. So look, here's what you have to do, Rebecca. You have to go into the repair shop with the car, and you have to ask them to listen to the engine with you standing right there. When they say they don't hear it, you'll say, I hear it. It's this noise, tick, tick, tick. Could you kindly check and see if any of my spark plugs is loose?
Okay, and my dad wanted you guys to know something.
Yeah,
we'd like to know
I'm calling
something.
Because you're not helping me, Dad, and these guys are great. And he said, you tell them that the only nut that's loose is the one behind the wheel.
that must
well,
be you.
We're wondering about that ourselves.
But before you go to the dealership and embarrass yourself, you might want to get a couple of more friends who can corroborate the existence of this noise, just to be on the safe side.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Good luck. But I'm voting for a loose spark plug. Good luck, Rebecca.
All right. You're the best. Thanks, guys.
See ya.
Great.
Bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hey, is Nate back?
Yes, I'm back.
Very good. So you went outside. You started the thing up.
Right.
And
it did not make the same sewing machine noise. There did seem to be kind of an undercurrent of whining wheeze that I think wasn't there before, but not the same sewing machine noise. That only happens when the car seems to be moving.
And this, it, make the sewing machine noise? It's
pretty subtle, but it's like...
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things...
As you're accelerating.
Yes.
Yeah, one of these things these engines are kind of famous for, one of the unfortunate things about these Subarus is they are susceptible to something called piston slap. And it's because the horizontally opposed design kind of lends itself to having pistons that crash against the cylinder walls as the piston is making its descent. And when that happens, it's accompanied by this slapping noise. It's exacerbated by the bigger explosion. So when you try to get a lot of power out of the engine, put a lot of fuel and air in, you get a bigger explosion, you get more piston slap. And with 150,000 miles, I wouldn't be surprised if that's what it is. The smell is almost certainly an oil leak.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear. But it might not be an oil leak of any consequence. I'm sure if you park this thing in the same spot every day, you are probably growing a lake of oil someplace. You see spots on the ground? You must.
Well, I park on a gravel parking pad, so I could do a cardboard experiment.
Yeah, that would be nice.
You might not even want to know. I mean, how do you feel that all of this, the leak, the noise, the smell, how do you feel that all of this is impacting your driving experience?
It's pretty minor. I mean, I was, I guess, somewhat reassured when my mechanic said, you know, don't sweat it. But at the same time, I mean, I was concerned because it seemed like the smell was getting worse. I thought they might be linked.
Well, I wouldn't rely on this guy. He doesn't seem to be motivated by money. So he's not interested in having you come in. You might want to find someone else that will listen to the engine, maybe take a test drive, tell you if it's piston slap or if your timing belt's about to break.
Okay.
If the belt could break, it would be nice to know that it's about to and get it fixed first.
Because if it does break, then I'm stranded.
There you go.
Oh, yeah.
I'm walking.
You're walking.
And walking.
Yeah, and walking for weeks and weeks and weeks. So get this to somebody, maybe even this guy. I mean, disturb him someday. Just pull in and say, hey, can we take a drive? Can you listen to what's going on with this thing? And if he convinces you that it is piston slap, you can drive the thing indefinitely.
Okay, so that's, if it's piston slap, it's not lethal.
No, and by the way, you should make sure that there's plenty of oil in it.
Yeah, I checked the oil. You know, it's due for an oil change, but, you know, when that first started happening, I figured I should at least check that since...
Yeah.
And it was full.
The dipstick seemed to be.
Yeah.
Seemed to be, yeah, that's good. Well, you'll probably go for another 15,000, 20,000 miles.
Yeah, that's what I figured. That's whether I need it or not.
But start shopping.
that's what I'm afraid of. I felt like Subarus are supposed to go to, you know, 200, 250. Like I...
Well, they can. I mean, you might get there at 150 now. If you nurse it, you might get another 50,000 miles out of it.
Cross my fingers.
But the anxiety that this creates, this other 50,000 is going to cause you to lose your hair and all that. So it might not
be worth it.
Has it happened already?
Oh, yeah.
Well, then go for it, man.
Tender young age of 31.
You got nothing to lose. See you, Nate.
Good luck.
Okay. Thanks so much, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. It's time for us to take a little break. And when we come back, we'll have a brand new puzzler.
Yes, we will. And what can you tell us about this upcoming puzzler? Is it another one from your sun-dried tomato series?
No.
Your gently aged blue cheese series? I mean, come on.
No. No artisanal cheeses. No antipasti this week. Sorry. The puzzler is from my Revolt of the Lab Rats series.
Ooh.
And we'll have that puzzler and more of your car questions coming up in just a minute right after this short break.
So please stay tuned.
I lost my job last Tuesday, that started my descent. My parents kicked me out because I couldn't pay the rent. And then my girlfriend dumped me, she said I was obsessed. cause I made her a bookcase and a duct tape wedding dress. I'm leaving the town, I'm broke, I'm down, no money left to fly, oh. So I'm driving my van to a festival in Avon, Ohio. I got a booth to sell my stuff, and I know that folks will buy, oh. I'll get rich and I'll find my niche. I'll do my best and I'll pass the test at the duct tape fest in Ohio.
And even though Conan O'Brien strikes NPR from his list of potential landing spots whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR. We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and, of course, the new Puzzler.
Mm.
And I did mention this is from my Lab Rats, Revolt of the Lab Rats series. And this was sent in, interestingly enough, by a fellow named Andrew Magliozzi.
No.
Who happens to be my son. I thought the name looked familiar.
Your son.
My son. Yeah, your nephew.
No kidding.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, we'll see how he did.
See, yeah, go, yeah. Go.
Well, he was listening recently, and he thought, I needed help. Imagine this. You ready?
Yeah.
It's the eve of the annual Car Talk We Haven't Been Canceled Yet banquet. Naturally, John Bugsy Lawler has procured the food and wine for the following evening's gala, and he's extremely pleased with himself because he knows a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy, and he's obtained for $50... 13 one-half-gallon jugs of the finest red wine that $50 can buy. He's very excited about the following evening's festivities until Doug Punkinlips Berman informs him that he received a note suggesting that one of those 13 bottles of wine contains a deadly poison.
Ooh.
Yeah, in fact, it's one that kills, like, within 24 hours. Oh. Someone out to get us? Who could be out to get us?
Everybody.
Why? Why not? Anyway, because they're hopeless cheapskates and unwilling to discard 12 bottles of perfectly good cheap wine, they head off to MIT to consult with a scientist friend of theirs.
Uh-huh.
So let's see, he says. You have these 13 bottles of wine, and one of them contains a poison that will prove fatal within 24 hours after it's been consumed.
Mm? Yeah.
And the Car Talk extravaganza is when? Oh, tomorrow night. The scientist goes on to suggest that from his knowledge of poisons, even the smallest sample is usually enough to cause certain death, even if mixed and diluted with the wines from the untainted bottles.
Yeah.
He says, I'll be right back. In a flash, he returns with four small cages, each one containing your standard lab rat.
Yeah.
Oh, what a moral dilemma, they think. Hmm. Have to sacrifice lab rats to save
cartoons.
But then they realize that they're in on this banquet too, so they say, the heck with the lab rats, we'll do whatever it takes. But wait, wait, they say. We have 13 bottles of wine. How are we supposed to save the entire Car Talk staff and empire with just four rats? You can do it, he says, and then disappears into the inky shadows.
Yeah.
So you're ready for this? You have four rats in little cages.
Okay.
13 bottles of wine. One of them has got poison in it.
Yeah.
Okay, and you can obviously take samples from any of the bottles, and you can give as much or as little as you want to any of the rats.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and even a little drop is going to kill a rat. If it would kill you.
Sure.
It'd kill a rat. So what kind of a test can you possibly... And don't forget, you're not going to know if the poison is fatal until the night of the banquet.
Yeah.
Because it takes 24 hours to kill human or rat.
That's it.
All right?
Yeah.
So you got 13 bottles of wine, four rats in their little cages, and how do you do it? Now, if you think you know the answer,
yeah,
write it on a handmade 8-foot Mountain Boy Sled Works toboggan with knot-free, flexible, steam-bent basswood planks, hand-carved willow cross pieces, foot room under the curl, genuine leather grommets, extra long rope, marine grade finish, and two or three adult size leg splints. Send it all to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
Now, if you have a question about your car, please give us a call. We're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Kevin calling from the Woodlands in Texas.
Hey, Kevin, what's going on, man?
I've got a 2003 Camry. It's a V6. And when I'm idling or very low speed, sometimes I hear this sound. It sounds like a kid playing with the straw. It sounds like... Yeah.
Okay, is it just once or does it keep doing it?
It usually only does it one time, but there was one day where I was idling for about 10 minutes in someone's driveway, and I heard it three or four times that day.
And does the noise sound like it's coming from under the dash, you know, or behind the dash, rather, or under the hood?
It sounds like it's coming from behind the dash.
Man, that's what I thought. Ah. That's exactly what I thought. There's a soda straw that's falling down the defrosted vent.
And it's going...
No, it sounds like one of the little vac... And I'm guessing that when you were parked and you heard the noise, or stopped and heard the noise, that you had the heat on.
I don't really recall. Probably. It's cold down here right now.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm going to suggest that that you do an experiment and you turn the heater off completely.
Okay.
And it may be that the noise goes away. I'm guessing that one of the there are various doors. They're called blend doors that direct the hot air or the cold air, depending on what you're asking for, to various places. You know, for your feet, your face, your windshield, and whatever. And it could be that one of those devices is leaking, and it uses vacuum actually to work these devices. And it could be that that's what the noise is coming from.
Okay.
You could. Contact your repair shop, and they could look and see if there's a service bulletin on under dash whistling noises, and they may be able to pinpoint the exact place where it's coming from. But I think that's what it is.
And they may be able to fix it for nothing.
No, they're not going to fix nothing for nothing. It's going to cost you hundreds. But you may want to buy an upgraded radio, something that's louder, could drown this thing out.
Oh, that'll do it, yeah.
I have a kid, and she's pretty loud.
You hardly ever hear this, except when you're at peace and quiet, sitting in a driveway for a few minutes.
Or going slow around the corner, yeah.
Yeah. Well, try running it with the heat off and see if the noise, in fact, is gone.
Okay.
And if it is, then that's what I guess is wrong with it. It's nothing to worry about, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't affected the performance of the car or anything.
No. And it won't. At some point, it'll whistle so badly that it'll drive you crazy, and then you'll have to fix it.
Oh, yeah, I won't fix it till then.
Okay.
I'll sell the car.
I had a feeling. See you, Kevin.
Thanks.
Take care. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Andrea, and I'm calling from Wilmington, Delaware.
Hi, Andrea. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. You sound very upbeat.
I am. I'm a very upbeat person.
We'll see if we can do something about that. What's going on?
Well, I was hoping you could settle an online debate that my husband and I are having. It happens every winter, and it's about warming up your car in the morning. And I'm wondering if you really have to do it.
So are you going to tell us who wants to do what here?
Well, my husband says yes. He's from Costa Rica, hates the cold, and his grandfather says that you always have to warm up a car because it helps the engine. But he leaves for work before I do, so he warms up both of the cars, which I appreciate because he gets them warm and I don't have to scrape my windshield in the morning because of that. But he starts the car, he'll come inside, he'll eat breakfast, he'll have his coffee, he'll brush his teeth, and half an hour later, the cars are still running. I don't think that you need to warm them up. I'm kind of like the put the key in the car and go.
I'm with you, Andrea.
So am I.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. He's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, on the very coldest of days, and you certainly don't get very many of them in Wilmington, Delaware.
Right.
We get a few here every couple of years. We get a day when it's 0 degrees. You might want to let the thing warm up for a minute.
Okay.
You know, but that's it.
But a half an hour is ridiculous.
All right.
Yeah, all you're doing is throwing money away.
Yeah, in fact, it could be argued that it's detrimental to the engine because it increases the amount of wear. You know, the only time you want the engine running is when you're going someplace.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of like sleeping in your clothes. You're going to wear them out when no one's going to see you. You know, so tell them that it's a bad idea, and it's bad for the environment, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, even though the cars are probably pretty clean running, he is pouring unnecessary unburned hydrocarbons and CO2 and carbon monoxide into the atmosphere unnecessarily. Mm-hmm. The only time you should be doing that is when you're actually going someplace.
All right, so I can safely say that I won this one.
You absolutely
won. I think
you're
going to say that.
Yeah, is he had any support online from this? Does he have any data to back up what he's doing? Because I don't think he's going to find very much of anything that's going to support his position.
No, I just think that he thought that's what he was supposed to do.
Oh, but if he were the kind of person who got in the car, started it up, and right away went 80 miles an hour, that's different.
No, he's not that kind of person. He likes driving the speed limit.
Good.
Well, the best way to warm a car up is to actually get in it and drive it
at
moderate speed. So even on cold days, you're doing the car a lot better by getting in and driving it at reasonable speeds.
All right.
So tell him to knock it off. And you know what he needs for, was his birthday coming up soon, maybe?
He just had it yesterday.
Oh, great.
Oh, he needs a pair of Bronco Nagurski long underwear. Yeah,
I'll see what I can do about getting him that.
Yeah, okay. he definitely needs warmer clothing because he's just, having come from Costa Rica, you said?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. No, this is going to, even Wilmington, Delaware is going to be like the Klondike.
It is. He hates it. You should see him when he goes up. He has a coat with four layers and a scarf and a hat and gloves, and he doesn't like the cold.
He needs the old Bronco Nagurski to the rescue. He'll put a pair of those on, and that itch will drive him crazy, but he'll be nice and warm.
All right. I'll have to get him a pair.
Good luck, Andrea.
Thanks so much, guys.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Andy. How are you doing?
Andy, how you doing?
We're doing great. Where are you from?
I'm calling from Louisville, Kentucky.
Yeah.
What, Louisville? We know you're a local because you say it right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a transplant, but I've adapted well, yes.
Where were you from originally?
I grew up in Auburn, Indiana, and then lived in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and then from Kalamazoo down here to Louisville.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you got the Louisville thing. Just, you couldn't do it better.
Anyway. Yes, it grows on you.
Well, thanks for calling, Andy.
Well, thank you. Well, I'm calling about my friend Pete. My friend Pete is a 1984 300 turbo diesel Mercedes. And the tumbler in the ignition is... it's on its way. Well, it is out, rather.
This is the ignition lock you're talking about.
That's
The thing that you put the key into.
That's correct.
Okay.
You know, I bought the car about 2 years ago from a farmer outside of Nashville. It's only got 160,000 miles on it. Yeah. You know, I've always had a little trouble with the key, and I thought, you know, it's probably because it's an old, worn key. I had a new one made, and it'd still get hung up, or it wouldn't turn. I'd end up having to... you know, talk nice to Pete, buy him beer or something to get him to turn over sometime.
Now, did you make the new key from the key that didn't work too well, or do you have a new key cut for you?
That's correct. I had a new key cut from the one that was, the edges were worn off a little bit.
Because you can perhaps go to the dealer and get a new key not made from your existing key.
Okay.
So it may be that your key is just worn out, and every time you make a key from a worn key, you never get any closer to solving the problem. In fact, you could argue you get even farther away from solving the problem.
Yeah.
Eventually,
right.
You'll be able to use that key on your front door.
I couldn't get it past first position. And I'd wiggle and wiggle and wiggle, and then I got online and I started reading about these tumblers that have gone out in these cars in the past. Just due to their age and their wear.
Sure.
And then I also got on and read about a locksmith trick where they use high-frequency vibration to get the pins to fall into place. So I grabbed my Sonicare toothbrush. I swear. And
I love
after
it.
About 5 minutes, it turned over to position two.
Really?
And I've been able to start the car. I haven't taken the key out. I've just hidden the fact that there's a key in it, and I've locked it. But my question is replacing a tumbler something that a weekend warrior of sorts can do? Is this something you think that a semi-mechanically inclined person can
Well, tackle? Yes, and yes, I believe so, and I'm not positive, but I think they call those people locksmiths.
Yeah, I've heard the term.
Yeah, and I think that's what you need, and you could take this apart. Of course, the advantage of having a diesel is you know, you're not running down the ignition or anything. When you turn that key to the second position, you can leave it like that indefinitely.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So you're determined to take this apart. Listen, the worst that can happen is that the car never runs again.
And oh, that's not that thing? Bad.
Yeah, I mean, I will confess that we occasionally will replace a lock, you know, in a car, but we usually do the whole kit and caboodle. We do the lock and the key assembly. And it's mm-hmm. and sometimes we have to move tumblers from one lock to another, but we don't like to do it because we screw it up. So
right.
if you have some confidence in your ability here, and if your mm-hmm. fallback position is you can call a locksmith and or buy a new lock and key assembly from the dealer, then go ahead and do it. Have you priced out a new lock and key?
$90 from the. I've got a dealer that's about 2 miles, and I actually have a shop that specializes in the old Mercedes about 3 blocks away. But labor isn't the cheapest thing. Basically, I've been told that if I can't get the key to move, they've got to drill it out, and that's about 4 hours of labor.
Yeah, so with the Mercedes dealer, that's going to be $800 labor,
$90 right,
plus there's just sales tax in Kentucky.
Yeah, 6%.
6%.
It's a piece of cake.
Yeah.
$4,000 or $5,000 is going to get you free.
Well, I you know what, Andy, I can tell no matter, there's no way that we're going to deter you from doing what you're planning to do, and I think you should take it apart and you should try to fix it.
Okay.
Why not? And this Mercedes place down the road from you is, what you said, 2 miles away?
2 blocks away.
Oh, 2 blocks.
Wow. Yeah, I can push it if I had to.
Better than that, take the thing apart in their parking lot. Are they open on Sundays?
Not on Sunday.
Perfect.
Right in front of the door.
Yeah, I would go there on Sunday, take all your tools with you, and try to effect a repair right in their lot. And if you can't, the thing will be right there for the Monday morning, and you can just write them a check.
Beautiful. All right.
Good luck,
man.
Thank
you guys for taking the car. Or taking my car. Thanks.
All right. See you later, Andy. Bye-bye. Well, it's happened again. You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are Louis Cronin, the Barbarian, and David, the Calves of Belleville Green. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Greater Lowell, Lemon Soul, Fried Egg Roll, Salad Bowl, Escarole, Fruit by Dole, Chaw by Skull, Donut Hole, Slurp and Stroll is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. Our PR specialist is Ulion Sack, assisted by Lotta B. Essen. Our staff brown noser is you, Luke Marvelous. Our gas tank welder is Stan Beck. Our sensitive language advisor is Holly Schmidt. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. The head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is you, Louis Dewey, known to the unloved bagpipers in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tapper Brothers. Don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1007, do-si-do through the Car Talk archives, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com, or you can call the Shameless Commerce Division at 888-CAR-JUNK.
Also this week at cartalk.com, reviews by owners.
Yeah, hundreds of makes and models reviewed by the people who actually own the cars.
With many expletives deleted, of course.
Indeed.
Check out our owner reviews or submit a review of your own car all week at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though canaries line up for coal mine duty whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.